closer. Welcome, everybody, to Hold That Thought. My name's John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. Tonight, I'm joined in the studio with Stick Martin. Welcome, Stick.
How you doing, Johnny?
Doing well. Thank you very much for joining. Today, I'm going to pick Stick's brain about creating. We got on this topic a couple weeks ago and with Eric Thompson, and we were talking about what it means to create and how you create and how you get the drive to create. Can you, you've produced a ton of music. Where do you get your drive from?
I was raised Catholic, so I just feel guilty if I'm not working. If I'm just sitting around, I just feel like I'm messing my life up and I should be working.
So is it one of those things, like, you know how people get hangry?
Yeah.
Do you, if you don't create, do you get that same type of feeling?
Yeah, I definitely start to feel bad. I don't know. I mean, I definitely, if I've gone, and there's definitely been times where, like, I've gone a year without actually finishing a project, and you do feel bad. You're like,
get that procrastination, guilt feeling going on.
Well, and it's about sticking to an idea. Like, it's, you know, everything's so fast-paced now that it's like, I know a guy, you know, they'll start up a project with these two guys, and they have a new band and a new Facebook page and everything. But 2 months later, they've got a new band and a new, you know what I mean? And it's just, I get it. I mean, everybody's got 1,000 ideas popping all at once. But it takes patience to see one thing all the way through to completion.
Stick with it. Yeah, it reminds me of this story I came across, this Picasso story. The story goes, Picasso was walking through the market one day when a woman spotted him. She stopped the artist, pulled out a piece of paper and said, "I'm a fan of your work. Could you please do a little drawing for me?" Picasso smiled quickly, drew a small piece of art on the paper, and then handed the paper back to her, saying, "That will be $1 million. But Mr. Picasso, it only took you 30 seconds to draw this little masterpiece." "My good woman," Picasso said, "it took me 30 years to draw that masterpiece in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
How do you go about pricing your art, your music, your craft, stuff that, I mean, because you got your discography is really, really huge. I tried to take head count, and I think I stopped at like 120 songs.
Yes.
The other day,
something like, I mean, as far as my own stuff, I wouldn't even know the number. I have no idea. 120, probably.
Yeah, I think that's what I came up. I came up with about 100. Because I picked up the Dodge store, and I have a lot of your CDs over the years. We've known each other for quite some time, and I think I stopped at 120.
Yeah. I mean, so what was the original question? What's the,
is there a way you go about pricing your art?
That, honestly, it's different for everybody. I mean, it's a lot of it's like what the market is doing. I mean, when I was a kid and I put out my first CD, it was this question of like, well, are you going to sell it for like 10, 15 or 20 bucks, right? Like that was like a real thing, you know? And now it's like, I'm like, should I sell it for $3 or $5 if I'm selling CDs at all now? You know what I mean? And I have found that like local, if you're a local artist, people will buy your CD. Even though CDs are dead, it's like, it's almost like a souvenir. You know what I mean? But that is, it's just, man, I mean, I want it. It's weird. You want to get as much as you possibly can for it, but at the same time, you want as many people to have it as possible.
Would you say online sales are better than actual physical sales? Do you feel that people are willing to spend more money if they were to purchase your CD on iTunes opposed to picking up your CD at a bar gig?
No, I think the physical copy still outsells the digital copy. I mean, all of my stuff's on Spotify and YouTube and all that stuff now, too. So it's like, if you're like, an MP3 isn't that much better than that.
Yeah.
The CD, at least you're holding something in your hand, you know. And don't get me wrong, the CD is dead. It's absolutely dead. Like I said, it's like a souvenir. You know what I mean? I mean, they might have a CD player in their truck or something outside, but
I much rather have the physical CD, though, but I like having something tangible, and I like seeing people's cover art. That's something you rarely, I mean, I guess the digital downloads come with cover art. I don't know. It's just not the same.
It's not the same.
No.
I think people knew more about music when you had to rewind your cassette tape. Like back, when I was a kid, you'd hit rewind, you'd have like 2-3 minutes to kill sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe it might have been 40 seconds. It might have just felt like 2 or 3 minutes. But like,
you'd pop the
cover out, man, and be like, Dr. Dre produced this track. I mean, you know what I mean?
Check out the credits.
You had time to kill. So you just started looking at album covers more.
Yeah. That brings back so many great memories.
Cassettes, man. They're awful. They're an awful format, but that's what I grew up on.
I recently read an article about some cat up in New York and who started collecting cassettes again, got an old cassette player, and the reason why he did it, he wasn't trying to be a hipster, he wasn't trying to be trending or anything like that. He did it because all day long he was behind the computer. He did IT work, and he spent 8, 10, 12 hours a day on the grind, working on the computer. So when he came home, he wanted to be completely disconnected from everything.
Yeah.
And that was the best way to disconnect. He just grabbed an old tape deck and...
It does have a sound that isn't digital, too. Just, you know, something about old cassettes. Don't get me wrong. I find I'm, like, totally ADD. I have like 3 or 4 people, we're all hanging out listening to music on Spotify. Like, rarely does a song finish. Like, it'll get like 2/3 done, and like, I click on another song. And it's like, I have to think all of my friends are as ADD as I do. They never complain about it, you know what I mean? But it is like when I put on a cassette, or my ex-wife used to be real into vinyl, and you know, she'd put a record on, and it would kind of be like, we'd listen to that album start to finish, like over lunch. You know what I mean? And even, I don't know, even when I'm driving, I'm probably grabbing my phone, switching songs and stuff before they're over.
Yeah, that was a cool thing about it, because you did listen to an entire album or entire tape, and you sat back and you listened to it. And I don't know, I think people probably spent more time thinking about that music and feeling that music than now, when everything just goes to playlist and switches over. And
it's weird too, because when I was a kid, like before I played instruments or anything really, like my favorite thing to do was like just make mixtapes, like sometimes for like a girl you liked or whatever, but sometimes just to have it. Like I'd spend like a weekend making like 3 or 4 mixtapes.
Awesome.
Yeah, like loved it. It's awesome. And I had limited like source material. I didn't have that much music. Well, I guess my brother was a DJ, so I had a lot. I could borrow albums from him to like, you know, make stuff. But it was just like arranging these songs, and like I was really specific about it. Like, I don't know if you remember, like the cassette tapes, like, you know, you'd have a 60-minute tape, 30 a side, right? So that last song on side A, if I went to record it and it got cut off, like I'd run out of tape before the song was over. Some guys, they just like restart the song on side B. Some guys would be like, no, that's good enough, you know, but I'd have to like delete that or erase it and then find a song that actually would fit in that 2 minutes.
In that time.
Yeah, just like was like just really, really particular about it, really specific about it. My dad, I don't know, my dad's a psycho, so I think it was the way I like hide out in my room all day away from my dad was making mixtapes.
That's awesome. And the amount of time put into that, just, it's what you did. I mean, you're creating a playlist.
Yeah, and it was weird too, because like you had to sit there and listen to the song as you recorded it. From, I mean, even when you got into like the CD era and stuff like that, like I couldn't record on CDs for a long time, or at least what seemed like forever. You know what I mean? No, I guess it was probably 15 years before you could record on CDs. So, but you know what I'm saying? It was like, so even when CDs came out, you still had to record it on the tape, which meant you still had to sit there and listen to the song as you made the mixtape. Which I think does make a difference. I mean, because I could throw you together like a Spotify playlist. I was like, all right, drag one from here, a couple from this band. Yeah, the investment's different.
Oh, completely.
You know, I'm like, but, John, listen to this, even though I didn't take the time to listen to it. You know?
Here's the question. Are kids making their friends or their loved ones a playlist on Spotify? I doubt it.
I don't. Yeah, like I've seen it in movies. But I haven't.
I mean, I've never heard of anyone going, hey, man, I put a playlist. Now, I will say this. I met this cat from New Hampshire, and he's come down, and this guy has a crazy, intense music collection. He actually goes and shops for CDs, and he buys these CDs, and he goes to the big trade shows, and I'll be asking him the other day, I'm like, so what you got with Jeff Beck? And he shows up to the bar and drops me off three burned CDs of Jeff Beck. And I was like, oh, this is great. And so he's been a great music source. But he's the only one I've actually come across that we sit down and have conversations about music besides musicians.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I talk to a lot of musicians. And most of the time, it's just about the booking or the business side or marketing. Very rarely do I actually get to shoot the shit about a playlist or setups or songs or anything like that. So this is pretty cool.
No, definitely, man. It's I mean, this stuff doesn't make the money right away. You know what I mean? Yeah. But what I've seen is like, you got new gigs, man? You got any new gigs? What are you booking festivals for some good money?
Come talk to me. Yeah, yeah. What do you have going on?
My phone got shut off 3 weeks ago, bro. You got some festival gigs coming up?
One of these days, I'm going to have a little, I'm getting there. So let me ask you a question. Does recording make you want to create more music? Because I follow you on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm always online doing some type of work. And I notice you're always recording new people.
Yeah, when I moved the studio to St. Pete, that definitely... It's like people are beating down the door to record in here now. Like it's I'm probably gonna start having a couple employees at the studio if I can
find the
right guys. Yeah, I mean it'll be nice because it'll make money while I'm not here. Which right now it doesn't make any money unless I'm actually manning the ship. And it's weird because a lot of people come here because they specifically want to work with me. But there's a lot of like non-creative stuff that goes down in a studio. There's a lot of utility cleanup stuff where honestly the artist doesn't need to be here for a lot of it. There's just, you know, being organized, having your tracks labeled correctly, all that boring stuff. So I definitely want to get somebody to help with that just so that can be happening while I'm not here. It's weird. It with a studio, it does get to the point where like I'm sick of music, where it's like, after a 4-hour gig where it's real loud and then the studio's not as loud, but you might be in here for 12 hours or something. It's like at the end of that day, if somebody comes over, like I don't like, my friend will come over, pick up an acoustic, start like, you know, just strumming some chords, doodling around, and I'll stop him. I'm like, bro, not right
I,
now.
I can't
like,
take it.
My ears are done for the day.
I can't take it.
Yeah.
After you produce something that you're really proud of, does that give you inspiration to create your own music?
It can. There's definitely times where I've been working with somebody and written like some guitar lick or something for a song and then they didn't like it. And then like that guitar lick was like ended up in my song a year later or something. I mean, that definitely happens all the time. It is weird. It's, I mean, I think there's like a lot of jealousy in music, especially like amongst my friends. So it's like if I'm, I mean, it's all friendly, but like, if, you know, I'm working with my buddy and he gets 5 songs done and then you look and you're like, yo, I haven't put anything out in 6 months. You know what I mean? You do kind of feel like I got to get my shit together. I got to put this stuff out. But I don't know if it's inspiration. I think it's petty. I think it's like envy and jealousy.
Hey, it gets you.
Whatever gets you creating.
Tell me about this. You took on, I'm not sure if you were trying to do a song a week, was it?
Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks you were creating a song, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And you took, how long did that last for? And are you still
like
doing
11
it?
11 songs, so 5.5 months, I guess.
Wow.
And I stopped just because, I don't know, I got real burnt out. Like I did like 11, but it was like, every day was like a crazy stressful, like I gotta drive home, bro. I'm only like 3 hours to get this thing to be like, every single day I was stressed out. And then there was a couple of songs that did feel rushed when I put them out, where it was like, oh man, I wish I had like another day or two to work on that. And not like another 2 months to work on it, but just like another 10 hours, you know. So I think I'm going to bring it back, actually starting in January, but I think I'm going to do just like one song a month, because that's about a record a year. You know, it's about an album per year.
Are you going to wait? Are you going to put all those on one particular album?
I think the way I'm going to do it is just release them by year. Like every time there's 12 songs, just release those and call it like 2017. And then the next one will be called 2018 or something. I don't know. I've done some conceptual stuff in the past, and it's cool. But I mean, that's the thing about those albums too. There's not the excitement because everybody, you know, as soon as I'm done with the song, I put it on the internet. So yeah. It's like, even if at the end of the year I put that out like as a physical CD or put it up on Spotify as an album, it wasn't released as an album. You got to take, you know what I mean? So to me, it's more, gotcha. It's more like a collection of songs rather than an album. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't written at the same time. They weren't all recorded with the same musicians. They weren't, you know what I mean? Everything sounds really, really different.
What type of concept albums have you done in the past?
Well, originally, Thrilla, which was our hip-hop record, which was going to be, it's basically all supposed to be, like, live radio broadcast, right? Like, that's, like, there's a fake radio station called WGTO, and they're playing all the songs from that record, and then there's commercial breaks and stuff like that through that record, and then we wanted to keep... The original idea was like that this radio station keeps getting like shut down and reopened and reformatted. So then like the next record, like it would have become like a country radio station. And then we would have recorded all our country songs, and they're playing all the country songs that we have.
That's awesome.
And they were going to be WTLR, the trailer.
Yeah.
You know, just stereotypical like country listeners live in a trailer, right? I know it's awful. But that was like the original ideas. But then you get into this thing, and I think we had 3 albums worth of stuff that we wanted to do that way. But it's like you get, you know, it gets to the point where you've been working for a year and a half straight, and you still don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Thrilla took 2.5 years start to finish to make. You know, I mean, there's like 23 songs on it. It's a whole lot of material. But it, you know, when you're 6 months in and there's still a year left before this thing, anybody's gonna hear any of it. You write new songs in that year that aren't gonna get recorded till these songs you wrote 3 years ago are finished.
Finished.
You know, yeah. It just started feeling like committing to some of that stuff was like tying your hands creatively. You know, and it's so weird too. It's like it's this ADD. World that we live in. I mean, I would love to be rich, man. I'd have a team of engineers and producers that help me, and I'd crank out like 2 songs a week, you know what I mean? If I had guys that could help me with every aspect of the recording.
And just sit back and actually create?
Yeah, or at least spend the time creating. Like, I mean, it's all creating, but I'd spend the time on the side of that I really enjoy more than the boring stuff, standing back there and shaking a tambourine into a mic.
Yeah. Back to creating, like, a lot of people talk about writing, but they actually never get around to writing. Do you set time aside to write every day, or where are these 120 songs worth of lyrics coming from?
I used to be a real... I mean, it's weird. I feel like I don't write enough. Like, it's like, I honestly feel like I should be writing more.
Well, is it improv? Do you improv a lot of these?
Sometimes, you know, sometimes like you'll improv something and then there'll just be particular lines or something that sticks out. Like if I remember it, well, that's, you know, it passed test one, you know, it was good enough that you remember it 3 days later. I think the secret to it is 15 minutes a day. Like you have to sit down and write 15 minutes a day, because if you get onto something good, you might sit there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
But it's like riding a bike. It's like once you're on your bike, man, you'll ride 10, 15 miles. But getting your lazy ass to unhook the bike.
Get on the bike and get started.
Yeah, and I think that's half of it. And it's like, I mean, there's times, too, where it's like sometimes you write something and it's emotional and you're like, you know, it's draining.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you don't want to write a song for 3 hours before you're heading into work because, like, you're going to get to work and be a space cadet, you know?
Yeah. I've been drawing a lot, and one of the things I've found is the same thing you just said. It's 15 minutes a day, and I sit down and 15 minutes, and it's cool to see the progression, and if you build that habit, it's it becomes a lot easier to create and a lot easier to put stuff out.
I heard something the other day. Not my idea whatsoever, but I was on like Lifehacker or some website or something. It just talked about like you have to be bored, like, and we live in an era where it's almost impossible to be bored. It takes so little effort to pull out your. I mean, my phone's amazing. My phone, I can do watch any video. I've like almost any movie. I can listen to any song I've ever wanted to. I can do little animations on it. You know what I mean? It's like I'm never bored. It's so difficult to be bored, and I think that's key, man.
There's so much stuff, material content out there. Whether you're interested in film or books or music, you can
podcasts.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a podcast subscription. It's like I'm never getting most of that at this point.
Yeah.
There's too much amazing stuff, man.
That you are correct. I know you got to get going here shortly because
we're okay. Yeah, we got a few minutes.
All right, right on. What do you have any creative patterns, routines, or rituals? Or is the bike ride helpful to get away from it all and just go and not think about anything?
No, yeah, for sure. And I rarely listen to music on bike rides or when I'm in the car. Almost never. I mean, part of that is just your strain. You know what I mean?
I'm just trying to figure out where the dragon and the pussy and the hip-hop thing came from. If anyone saw Sticks post a couple weeks ago, he was trying to figure out lyrics to.
Oh.
What was that?
It was something stupid. Sore vagina was. I was just some rhyme. It was so ridiculous, but I put it on Facebook. Sore vagina. Or make your vagina. I was trying to write dinosaur.
Yeah.
With vagina sore. With make your vagina sore and dinosaur. That's why, I don't know. That's why I love rap music. Because you'd be so openly stupid in hip hop music.
And it's hip hop. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, you're supposed, I don't know. I mean, and there does seem to be like, you know, I love the Beastie Boys. I've always been a huge Beastie Boys fan. Like, they were never more popular than like, when they were 17-year-old morons, you know what I mean? Like,
and they were not afraid.
No,
I mean,
it
was not politically correct. They just got out and.
No, yeah.
And rap. So do you have a certain style that you like to create right now? Because it's been like 8 months or a year since I've last seen you play.
Yeah.
Or actually not that long, because we were at the studio at the Mixtape Series. But prior to that, it was a while, and you were on this big country kick.
I was doing a lot of country.
Yeah.
Which
I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's weird. Live now, we do a ton of blues, like a ton of like really swingy blues stuff. It's easy for people to dance to.
So are you taking the Ben Bryan direction where you're just kind of throwing it all out there and you're not afraid to step in one particular style anymore?
No, for sure. I mean, we'll do, there's stuff that we can't play.
Yeah.
We don't do jazz. We don't do, you know what I mean?
You're not going to do jazz standard. But I understand that.
You know, any of the, we did pop, rock, and blues, you know what I mean? And we'll mix that stuff up. We'll do reggae versions of rock songs and stuff like that. But I don't know. It's just getting to the point where I want everything to be really danceable. I want everything, like, you know what I'm saying? Just... I want people to be able to dance for the
first time. Is that because you're trying to please the bars and venues, or
you just want to get when people are up and dancing and snapping their fingers and shit as they walk through the bar. I mean, that's awesome. That's my favorite thing.
One of the things I used to do at when I was stuck on a Sunday night at the Green Iguana in the inside bar, If I got a really, really bad band that was just struggling to maintain, there'd be times I'd be stuck behind that bar and just me and the bar back and nothing really going on. One of the things I used to do was clap. And I clapped and I interacted. And no matter how bad the band was, I like befriended them, and I was just clapping, and I would get involved. And it was like being that drunk sister-in-law at the wedding where she just has the balls to get on the dance floor and start going. It actually, it helped with everything.
Now, yeah, it's so weird, too. I like, when I play hard rock, which is like an older crowd. I mean, you see some young people in there from time to time, but it feels like 50s on up, right? I mean, it seems right. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, I would say their demographics right around there.
And it's like, I don't know if those people just like felt like they haven't looked cool in so long that they don't care. But I mean, as soon as like we'll play stuff like Run Around Sue, we like we do a ton of 50s stuff now, and those people dance immediately, you know. Up on their feet, be able to see like men that don't know girls walk up and like offer their hand to dance and some, you know, like I never see anybody my age do that.
Wow.
Like, you know, like is that John, how'd you meet Carrie? He's like, well, we were at the barn dance and I you know, I saw she was looking pretty from across the barn and I offered her my hand. Like that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and you still see that with people that, oh, that generation. It's
which
like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's cool that you can observe that. A lot of people can't observe that and see that. And that's probably what elevates your game is because, okay, I'm going to play a little bit more dance music than normal.
Yeah. And, don't get me wrong, man. I love dance music. I love it. I think my thing was when I was a kid, and I'd play these gigs. Like, I don't mind playing covers. I've never minded. I never saw there was like, oh, well, this is a cover band. This is an original band. To me, my bands have always done everything. We just like, we have 100 some songs or whatever, but like, there's millions of other songs. You know what I mean? I can get sick of that 120. So, but lately, when we do play live, if it's going to be a cover, it's going to be something they recognize. It's going to be Stand By Me. It's going to be just something the crowd is not having a hard time with. Because if it's going to be something they don't know and it's like a challenge to get a bar to listen to it, it's definitely going to be an original. Whereas for a long time, I would like play like some Pearl Jam B-side or something. Like, you know, there might be a popular band, but it was like this song that you had to be kind of a pretty big fan to have heard.
It's good. I think the my headphone cords are just slapping up against the desk and making some noise. Sorry. We had a little technical glitch.
But you know what I mean? Like, I play some old Ween songs or something that just like nobody but me and two of my friends in the bar recognize.
Yeah, I don't think the general population will ever, like, if I hear something out at a bar, I'm going to pull the artist aside on the break and go, hey, man, who was that? Yeah. I really like that song. A lot of people just don't. A lot of people want to hear what's popular, and that's cool. But it's good. It's cool that you know what people are looking for.
Well, at least as far as the older stuff, I attempt to know new stuff, but it's just hard to keep up, or like it flies by. I'll make some reference to like some trap song or something, and then it turns like, oh yeah, that song was a hit 2.5 years ago. I mean, it just seems like I can't keep up anymore.
Is there any newer artists that you like to cover?
No, not really. I cover some Jack White stuff, some like newer songs that guy puts out, but I mean, he's been on the scene for like 20 years or something now. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to learn that song, Take Me to Church, right? But Hosers? I don't even know the artist that does it.
No, you're right.
And even that song was probably like real big like 2 years ago or something now, right?
I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know if it's just because we're getting older.
What type of requests are you getting lately when you're at the bar?
Honestly, man, people are still seem to be the most vocal about like 70s rock. Like, yeah, still, I don't know.
That's random.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like I might be playing some bar where there's it's 80% kids in their 20s, but that one lady in her late 40s is going to come up and scream Marshall Tucker at me like over and over and over. Like, I don't know. There is something about seeing a band in a bar, though. You just expect them. Like, we still get Mustang Sally a lot.
Wow.
You know, like, Mustang fucking Sally, man. Like, that's was like Like, our dad's bands were like, oh, chick asked us for Mustang Sally. We played it because she was hot. We played it because she was good looking, you know? But it is like that. It's amazing how often I still get asked for Mustang Sally. Which was like, me growing up, I don't think I heard that song really till I was like in my 20s playing in bands and stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. There's something about a bar band where you assume this is the
I think once people are drinking and they see the band, they instantly think it's okay to just spout out whatever their favorite song is. And I think that's when the alcohol steps in and they're shouting out their favorite song. They're just shouting out whatever comes to the top of their head. And that's where I think Free Bird and Mustang Sally and all that shit music comes at.
And even that stuff, it's like, those songs are probably really good. We're just sick.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm sure, man, if it was like 1976 or whatever, and you and your buddies wearing jean jackets, smoking weed, like, and Freebird comes out as like a single, I bet we would have lost our mind for the whole summer on that song, man.
You know
what I mean? But it is. It's just like, man, on top of the song itself being incredibly played out, just bad bar cover versions are incredibly played out. I don't know. But probably great songs. Yeah. You know?
With your set list, are you throwing in a lot of originals these days?
Yeah. You know, I did this super nerdy thing where it probably started maybe 3.5 years ago, where I just literally had never had like an accurate list of all the songs I knew how to play, originals and covers, right? So I just started making this, just start off as a straight up list of songs. And I would have that list and it'd be at like 180 songs or something. And like sit around for an hour, couldn't think of one more song. 2 days later, you remember 25 more songs that you knew. Sometimes 3 weeks later, I'd be like, Pearl and Pink Floyd, whatever.
Yeah.
I know 9 Pink Floyd songs. Like, how did I not think of that band? And you're right, you know what I mean? I'd start like looking through like my old CDs. And remember, like, oh, yeah, I learned that song from Odelay 20 years ago. I guess I'll play that. Like, and I think it's finally probably relatively accurate. Everybody, 1.5, 2 years. But then I turned that list into a spreadsheet, right? Like, I started going really, really nerdy with it. So I started going, like, what key is the song in? What year did the song come out? What's the tempo of the song? What's the tempo my band plays? Is it a cover? Is it original? And then the biggest thing that I ever came up with was like just giving it a grade of 1, 2, or 3. 1 is like crowd pleaser. 3 is something they've never heard of. And gotcha. I shouldn't even say never heard of, because there's sometimes, like I said, there's funny songs and stuff that you can play that like they've never heard of that actually work better because the song is more of a joke with a punchline. And it's actually a bigger impact if they don't know the punchline. You know what I'm saying? But basically just like crowd response, 1, 2, or 3. 1 is really good responses. 3 is really bad responses, or no response.
Have you been able to keep up with that list?
Yeah. And that has helped. I make 3 times as much money in tips. I just, you know what I mean? Just a little bit more organization on that. And then when those gigs, I was actually talking to Ben Bryan about this once. He, like, sometimes we all get to the gig, we're just like, nobody's paying attention or nobody's there. You're outside and it's kind of rainy or just 110 degrees. Where, like, he told me sometimes he'll just, like, start playing through his list of songs alphabetically, right? And what's awesome is, number one, nobody ever notices, right? Nobody ever picks up on the fact that he's doing it. And number two, like, and it's Ben Bryan, the kid probably knows 3,000 songs. So at the end of 4 hours, he's still on, like, the B's or C's, man. He's not even getting deep into it. But I took that idea, and sometimes like I'll go and I'll start with like the oldest song that I've ever learned, which is probably from like the 1920s or something, and then just like start like this set. I'm gonna start in the 20s and just play the song sequentially as I know them. I did something which is like a DJ trick, where when DJs mix records together, if those two records are in the same key, or at least like work, I'm not gonna get too nerdy with it, but if they're in the same key. Or certain keys can work together, like those records will mix better than just two random records, right? And so
I've never heard that before. That's cool.
And so what DJs will do, yeah, it's pretty musical. And the better DJs usually have some kind of musical theory when it comes to this stuff.
Gotcha.
But so what's funny is what DJs will do is they'll take like their MP3 collection or their music collection. And so just so there's 24 keys, 12 major keys, 12 minor keys. And to make that easier, they go like, well, you know what? I'm going to take take everything, and I'm not gonna have any songs in E flat. We're gonna put all those songs in E. So then instead of 24 keys, they're actually only working with like maybe 7 or 8 keys. And I've actually done like quite a bit of that. So I have like a bunch of songs that are in F. I play them all in E now. So in the middle of that song, it can switch to other songs that are in the key of E. I can just kind of like do live remixes of multiple songs. And it's easier because I'm using fewer chords. It's I don't know, super nerdy stuff. Super.
No, that's awesome. And do you ever give yourself restrictions like that when you're creating your own music?
No, yeah, restrictions are what it's all about.
Yeah,
that
is. Do you implement restrictions when you're creating stuff?
Yeah, for sure. We're only in the planning phases, but I'm working on doing a hip hop record. With this kid where we're literally going to use like this one old synthesizer, this one old school drum machine, and then like mics, like rapping on top of that. Because, and like it'll probably be like 5 songs or something, and there'll be some little songs, just like, but that's part of it. Like, that's what an album used to be, right? Like in 1952, you would come in and record in my studio, right? But it's like, you'd come in and it'd be like, we'd have some fast songs, some slow songs. This is a boogie tune. This is your broken hearted tune, right? But it was like the same 4 or 5 guys in the same room on the same 2 amplifiers, same drum kit. So even though these songs were different, some you wrote, some were covers, the fact that we did it all in one room and probably did it all over the course of a couple of sessions or whatever, like, man, it really was held together by the fact that of the limitations of that studio. And a lot of that is like, that's why, you know, you loved that record and you hated that record, you know? Whereas like now it's like, man, like every song can have a different drum sound. And oh, well, I'll send this to my buddy out in LA and he'll bring in his backup singers out there. And there, don't get me wrong, there's something awesome about that too. But back in the day, just the limitation of the room you recorded in made all those songs kind of feel like one collection, you know?
You know, that it reminds me of Green Eggs and Ham. When Dr. Seuss's,
Seuss's
publisher came up to him and said, I bet you $50 you can't make a kid's book and with 50 words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he produced Green Eggs and Green Ham. And I mean, you put limitations on yourself, you're forced to be.
I didn't know that story. That's cool.
You're forced to be creative. The last podcast I did, episode 4 with Eric Thompson, I gave him a challenge, and it was called the Pick 5. And on the Pick 5, he's got to go create 5 different songs with 5 different artists. One of them was at a park, a busy park. The other challenge was to create a song with no instruments. The other one was create a song with no string instruments. And then the other one was to basically write the lyrics of a song, rip all the lyrics of the song up, throw them in a hat, pick them out. That's the way you're going to play the song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when you give people limitations, I think that's when the creative process really kicks in. And I mean, like, could you and I would, it'd probably take us a while to create a really kick-ass kid's book with 50 words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure both of us would be willing to take the challenge on.
No,
but
I wrote a song probably 3 years ago called Corn Maze. You know what corn maze is, right? Like a harvest season,
yeah.
Especially like out in the Midwest, they have a lot more of them, but it's like they'll cut like a maze out of this cornfield, and you know, it's like a life-size maze you walk around in, right? But then like, and I don't know why it took me 30-some years to figure this out, but I realized like Native Americans, right? Native Americans call corn maze, right? Like M-A-I-Z-E.
Yeah.
So I was like, so that's a maze. You know what I mean? Like that, so that like got my brain turning so that I wanted to write a song where every single rhyme was based off one sound. A's, right? So it's like, I'm amazed by this maze whose walls are made of maize. Lazy days in the amazing maze made of maize, right? Like just like stuff like that for like 3 minutes. And like, it's funny. It's hard to get through because everybody, like you just start laughing. Like,
oh, that's got to be challenging.
Yeah, and it's
did you actually produce that song?
No, not yet, because it's impossible to remember. That's what's weird. There's something about rhymes that your brain uses as cues to memory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when everything just rhymes with itself, you get lost trying to sing. I mean, literally, I sang it once on another podcast, and it probably took us like 5 takes, and I think he edited the takes together just to make the complete song. And I've never written a song that was like that hard to perform before. And the chords are stupid and easy. You know what I mean? It's not hard to play.
Yeah.
It's just difficult for your brain to handle that sound for 5 strings.
I wonder if there's any type of brain exercises or something that you could come across, exercises that you could do online that you could
to where the words don't have meaning anymore. I think I literally just need to like get it to that level of memorization where I'm not thinking about what any of it means. I want like just muscle memory where my mouth is just doing it on its own, you know.
Folks, we're about to create the lumosity of
poor songwriting.
Well, cool. You know, it's always a pleasure to get together with you. And where, for all my listeners out there, where can people find your music?
Just stickmartin.com is a great place. That's my website. Pretty much everything is always collected there, and it's usually collected there first. Eventually, everything ends up on YouTube and Spotify and iTunes or whatever. But
YouTube, yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah, but like with the new stuff, it's I probably will put it on the website like the day it's completed in the studio, and then it probably won't end up on Spotify for like a year.
So. Cool. And as always, I will add Stick Martin's links in the podcast, and I'll probably add a couple of his. I'll add his website and his social media links, and we'll take it from there. But
I've been doing a lot of Snapchat. I've been making a lot of Snapchat videos. Lately.
Yeah, my wife's got that Snapchat and funny cat pictures and all
I
that
might
shit.
I might retire from music and just do Snapchat if I could figure out a way to get paid, because I've been having a lot of fun with
I'm
that.
Sure there's a way to do it. All right, man. As always, I appreciate it, brother.
For sure. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Thank you.